Welcome to In the Circle, the premier softball podcast. Here are your hosts, Eric Lopez and Victor Anderson.
Welcome to another edition of In the Circle. Eric Lopez here alongside Victor Anderson. And Vic, you know what week this is, right?
It's a lot. That's a, I can answer that question a lot of ways, sir.
Well, it's draft week.
Yes.
And no, I'm not talking NFL draft now.
What's that?
I don't know what that is. I've heard a rumor about
it. Not for long.
No, it's NPF draft week.
Yes.
NPF draft gets going Monday night, April 24th. It'll be on NPF TV. And we've got our draft guru, Justin McLeod, joining us to break down the 2017 edition of the NPF draft. Who are the candidates to go number one overall to the USSSA Pride? Who are the sleepers? Who are the key players to follow in this draft? That's what we'll break it down. But before we get to Justin, Vic, tell the audience where they can find us.
Follow us on Twitter, In the Circle SB. Subscribe to our blog, inthecircleblog.wordpress.com. Be on the lookout for our bracketology, D1 and D2, coming up in the upcoming days.
In fact, by the time you tune into this, it'll probably be out.
Yes.
So check it out on the blog.
Yes, yes. Of course, you can subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic and iTunes. You can send us an email, inthecirclesb@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook as well.
No question about it. Well, it is another year of the NPF upon us, and it always begins with the NPF draft. This year, a little different. It's going to be on a Monday night, and it's on NPF TV, not on CBS Sports Network or on a Thursday night like in the last couple of years. Still, some intrigue going into this year's draft, including who's going to be number one draft pick. Is it clear-cut? You know, in past years, Vic, we've had clear-cut number one picks.
Yeah.
Lauren Chamberlain obviously comes to mind. But this year, it's a little bit more up in the air, perhaps. So we'll see what happens this year. And then who are some of the key names and strong positions in this draft? And, of course, you have the conflict of some players being going to the Team USA, and how will that affect the draft strategy?
Always, it was a big, big influence last year how certain teams made their selections. And I know the USSSA Pride benefited from it late in their draft, where they got Aubrey Monroe, Kelsey Stewart, and Haley McClenny, who all joined the team later in the year because of their commitments to Team USA after the Women's College World Series, of course.
No question about it. And the man who will give us his perspective, he covers the NPF as well as college softball on Justin's World, and he's got his big board up already. I speak of Justin McLeod. Justin, another year of the NPF Draft 2017 edition. Welcome. Give me your thoughts here. Let's start it off. What's your thoughts, the biggest storyline you have going into this draft on Monday night?
One of the biggest ones has got to be how different of a landscape it is going into this draft because of the Team USA ties. You've got top talent that is committed to Team USA, and as we know from past years and past quotes, etc., committed to USA means you're committed to USA as your top priority. So that's got to be one of the top things, is how is that going to factor in as to the top players being selected with the top draft picks or not being selected because of those ties.
How many players potentially could be impacted in this draft? Is it a decent amount of players? And obviously it could affect some of the strategy with some of the teams, right?
Oh, absolutely. Some teams can afford the luxury of picking a player knowing, well, she may play for us, she may not. You know, you're just not knowing. There are seven players on Team USA that are seniors. You're talking about talent like Casey Cooper at Auburn, Hannah Flippen at Utah. I mean, just players like that. Excuse me. And, of course, Danielle O'Toole from Arizona. You're talking about players that, if they were free and clear and ready to play pro, you're talking about potential number one picks, number one overall picks right there. In all seven, almost. You got Spalding from UCLA and Zirkle from Marshall and a couple of others. Excuse me. Any of whom could go number one. But you've got that little asterisk next to their name, says Team USA. Teams have to second guess that. They can't necessarily afford to pick the best player. They may just have to go with the best player who will play for them, which is, you know, that's a, it's a wide open definition as to what they're most looking for once those kind of things start entering the equation.
and UAAA Pride that has that number one pick for their second time in 3 years, or kind of one of those ball clubs that has that luxury that they can take somebody knowing that they have the commitments to Team USA and not have them join them until later on in the year. With all the moves that they've made in the offseason, where would you think the Pride are going to lean towards with that number one overall selection?
Well, one place I really see a good potential of them going is right back to Tallahassee. Got a couple of players on Florida State's roster that are solid talents, had stellar 2016s, great 2017s, you know, great, maybe not great by their standards, but great by anybody else's. And I really could see even possibly going back there with the Alameda ties, etc. That's one possibility. But like you say, the Pride also have that, or one of the teams that have that luxury of, you know, we can pick who we want to and don't have to worry about, you know, filling out a roster. The talent they already have on that roster has a good chance of winning a championship. Anything else is icing on the cake. And when you're talking about icing on the cake, you can afford to get a little creative. And creative also includes picking players that, you know, may never set foot on your field or put on your jersey.
Which Seminole would you feel is the best player in this draft? Because there's a few of them, okay? So there's a few to pick from. You got Jessica Burrows, the pitcher. You got Alex Powers, the power hitter. I mean, which Seminole? Because, and it's nothing new in the NPF. I remember there was the year where certainly that coaches could have influence. Lonnie Alameda will return in her second season with the Pride, and it would make sense to pick a player that you know very well. Certainly, I mean, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you could correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, when Beth Torino was with the Pride 1 year, Brittany Mack went number one overall, if I'm not mistaken, of course, the former LSU pitcher. So with that in mind, if they go in that route, and we don't know if they will, who knows, but if they were to go in that route, which Seminole would be the best fit there at number one?
I could see either one of them being taken. Playing under Alameda, so strictly talking about playing for the Pride, I really like Burrows' potential. I don't know that her potential would be realized as abundantly for another NPF team as it would be if she was to play under Alameda in the Pro League. Powers, like I say, a little bit of a down year compared to last year, but when you hit 400 and, you know, seemed like she was hitting 800 some of the time, and the power show she put on and performing well in the postseason and all that, it's a little bit of a down year for her this year, but after she came off those injuries that started her career, she has played absolutely lights out. And because of that, I see Powers as the best overall prospect on the Noles roster. But I see her and Burrows equally having a good chance to succeed if they're drafted and end up playing for the Pride because of that Alameda connection.
If it's not a Seminole, who should be the number one pick, regardless of who's the team that's picking number one or whatever? If you were in charge of the number one pick, who would you take?
It's really tough. And I know that sounds like a cop-out, but it's very tough. And again, it goes back to those USA ties. If we didn't have any USA ties that we were talking about, it would be Danielle O'Toole from Arizona, hands down. That would be my number one, but then you're talking about Team USA ties. There's always that caveat. So you say, okay, is the number one pick, even for a team like the Pride, it is the number one pick, is that worth it on a player who may not? And even if she does, you're talking about, what, 4 weeks worth of games, something like that? Is it worth it? And that's something they've got to consider. You know, like I said, even though they're a stacked roster, got the money to afford players, you know, on a little more of a livable wage, what's worth it with the number one pick? Is it worth it to pick a player who's got those USA ties, who's going to play an abbreviated schedule for you if she plays at all?
It's intriguing, Justin. I'm looking over at Akron. They're picking number two behind USSA, and their roster is certainly young and talented, especially with the infield. They got the Rookie of the Year in Sammy Fagan, Alex Hugo, Kelly Montalvo. If you're Akron at number two, do you address your catcher position? You got Hannah Day, who you drafted a rookie from Troy, and Griffin Joyner. Do you maybe see somebody like Jaquish going to Akron number two overall?
Akron's had good success with drafting out of LSU. You can look no further than Rachel Fico. But one thing about Akron, it's actually a thing that I don't mind admitting I actually enjoy, is Joey Arrieta cultivates almost a family atmosphere. You know, it's one of those teams that you've got likable players that, you know, are over and abundantly fan-friendly, you know, and that they just feel like almost your family, and I'm just the fan base. And she's cultivated that for years. Excuse me. And even in her draft, sometimes you might wonder, okay, well, why is she picking such and such player with such and such pick? And there have been times where it can harken back to something similar. Top talent, maybe not the number one name, the biggest school, et cetera, but it's solid talent that she thinks can make an impact on her team, but that also fits into that mold that she wants her players to be in. She doesn't want them to just be good players to play well together. I mean, she wants them to be that, but not just that. She also wants them to be part of her mission to have her, and I keep calling it a family atmosphere. That's really kind of what it comes across as, almost. You know, just the players that really enjoy doing what they do, love the game, and love the people to support them. So, with that in mind, you kind of have to look at it and say, okay, she's not after necessarily the top name. Now, don't get me wrong, anybody wants the top name, but that may not be her top priority to get the top name, to get, you know, Lauren Chamberlain, you know, a few years ago. Well, it may not be her objective to get the player who's got the home run record. She may rather have the player who hit 450 3 years in a row at a smaller school. So that's a part of it, too. As far as your question about addressing the catcher position, yes. I think it's definitely a need for Akron. But I don't know that they'll address it at number two. It's a weak catching class behind Jaquish. You got some solid prospects, but then you kind of have to think about, okay, well, are they draft-worthy prospects, or are they more free agent signings a little down the road kind of thing? I see them picking up a catcher at some point, Joyner and Day. I think they just, if nothing else, add somebody to that fray and let them compete and see who can come out with the most starts behind the plate. And don't forget, Sammy Fagan can catch a little bit too if she had to.
But, you're right about that. And, you know, Arrieta is certainly very well respected. We just had Rachel Fico on in a recent episode.
Yes.
Who speak glowingly about Arrieta and how why it's so great to play for Arrieta in Akron.
And that harkens back to what I was saying about the atmosphere she cultivates. She's not just looking to build a winning ball club. She wants players who are going to abide by the certain standards she's got of, you know, that. She makes it fun to play for. I put it that way. You're talking about when you play in the NPF, there's got to be a solid portion of you that plays just because you love playing the game. And she not only looks for that, she cultivates that. That love for the game and the love for the people who support you in trying to make this what right now is a fledgling pro dreams almost still, that supports you in trying to make that work.
Is this a pitcher-heavy draft? Like, if you had to identify the identity of this draft that it'll be remembered for, it's more of a pitcher draft than any of the skill positions that jumps out?
It's definitely pitcher-heavy. Now, one caveat I'll add is that after you get past, so to speak, the first tier of the draft, it dips a little bit. But, yeah, there are some top pitchers available. I mean, from big programs and from little programs. I mean, you're talking about the Gorleys, the Burrows, excuse me, the Betzes from Michigan, you know, players like that from all over the country, and, of course, O'Toole out west, like we talked about, you know, top level, top shelf, put them up against top competition, they still win. But you're also talking about schools like Ohio, Louisiana Lafayette, even SIU Edwardsville, Marshall, that have really talented pitchers who can make an impact on a large college stage and even on a pro stage. So, yeah, I don't think it's wrong to call it a pitcher-heavy draft because you've got some real talent in the circle coming out of school this year.
Now, the Chicago Bandits, the two-time defending NPF champions, have two picks. They got the third pick and the fourth pick in the first round. But this is going to be a different draft than any more recent for the Bandits due to the fact new ownership, new general manager. Aaron Moore is no longer there. So it's really up in the air here, Justin. This was the big story in the offseason with the Bandits, with the changes in management. We don't really know as far as what direction they might go in the draft, or maybe in the past with Aaron Moore, you kind of had an idea in his kind of his trends that he liked. So really, it's going to be an interesting intrigue to see what the Bandits do here in this draft.
It's definitely a different dynamic than you've seen in past years because there have been so many huge changes this offseason, not just in management, but in ownership, in coaching, and et cetera. And one thing to keep in mind, too, is the town of Rosemont that now owns and manages the team are only committed for 1 year. Contracts only going for 1 year. So reason would stand that they're approaching the draft in the same way. Who's going to help us maybe this 1 year? Because of that, I don't see them reaching for a lot of the USA players. They may pick one up, you know, if it's just one of those best available kind of fill their needs spots. But they've gotten some good free agency help. You know, they've gotten picked up Haley Wagner from the disbanded Rebellion, and that's going to help them some. Picked up Alexa Peterson from the same team in the same situation. They've added some good talent. And it's interesting to me to see how the Bandits will approach this draft. Will they abide by the same thing that Aaron Moore had done, which was to pay close attention to the regional market and cultivate the college fans straight up to the pros because they're players that they've watched for 4 years are coming straight up? Or will they just look to build a team that can win this year and then look at next year when next year comes? It's very interesting to me to see how the Bandits and their new ownership and such will approach it. Honestly, even from a mock drafting standpoint, it's one of those things, you're not quite flying blind, but you've got the poor vision goggles on, I'll put it that way.
And with that being said, Justin, with everything that's going on in Chicago and the infusion that they got in with the Australian national team and some of their players showing on the roster, where do you see Chicago going? They have a very young staff still, even with Wagner. You got Waldrop and Shelby Turnier, who'll be in her second year. They only have one catcher on the roster, that's Fuller from Florida. So where would Chicago go with those back-to-back picks at 3 and 4?
If Akron doesn't pick up Jaquish at 2, and I personally don't think they will, I could see Chicago picking her up. That's one, you know, they picked up Kelsey Kloss last year. Of course, Kloss retired this offseason, or that wouldn't be an issue for him. Excuse me, of course, Lexi Elkins they signed, and she promptly retired. Now, Alexa Peterson can catch. She's more known as an outfielder of late, but she can catch. She caught earlier in her career. So it's not necessarily if I'm not mistaken, Chelsea Forkin, the Australian. So it's not necessarily a position where they don't have any players but one, but it is one that they need to address. I could see them picking Jaquish because Jaquish can catch. Jaquish can play the corners, and Jaquish can hit. And I see Jaquish's hitting style, a little fluctuating, though it does, translating well to the pro league. I can see Jaquish going there. And again, Chicago's another one that's had solid success with some LSU picks. Yeah, short-lived success, but solid success. Pitching, I don't see Chicago picking up pitching that early. Like you said, they've got Waldrop, Wagner, and Turnier. That's some veterans who've been around a few years and have some experience under their belt, but they're still young. They've still got those powerful arms. I will say that one arm they're going to miss is Angel Bunner. I mean, she was a late season signing, but she performed very well for them down the stretch. Of course, we all know what she did in the postseason and in the championship series and all that. Now she's gone to the Pride, and you kind of go, okay, you see what happened there, mid-season signing, top form like that, led the pitching staff. Well, can they find somebody this year who can do that just from day one instead of, you know, the middle day of the season? That's a big question to me. They need that true veteran or that true solid rock in their pitching staff to kind of anchor them. Because, I mean, nobody's perfect. No pitcher's going to be on all the time. See, but you need somebody who's going to be there solidly to kind of help the other ones when they struggle. And I don't know that you have that. I don't think you're going to get that in a rookie. I don't know that you're going to get that in a veteran even. But I think they're in a position where it's one of those things that, yes, they need pitching. Do they need it so bad, so much that they have to take one right off the bat? I don't think so.
We're speaking with Justin McLeod right now, breaking down and previewing the 2017 NPF draft. Take a moment, Justin. Tell the audience about the coverage you're going to provide on draft night as well as leading up to the draft.
Well, we've already put out my big board for the season with the top prospects available at each position. Next weekend we'll be releasing my mock draft, kind of maybe projecting a little bit where some teams are going to pick who and what their needs are going to be that they're going to fill. And then on draft night, I'll be live tweeting, and we'll break down some of the picks as they go. And then the day after draft night, we'll have a full recap available online, same spot as all of our other college and pro coverage, justinsworldofsoftball.org.
And by the way, I can tell you, last year during the draft, I was in Houston, and I was following you, and you and Vic, I think, were tweeting during the draft. I like to see that again. I was going to get some interaction
going. It will be happening this year.
One of the interesting things, let's kind of a team that we haven't mentioned in this draft, is the Charge, the Texas Charge. What's your thoughts on them, and what do they need to accomplish in this draft, and in particular with their first pick?
Well, for me, both Texas teams, that would be the Scrapyard Dogs and the Texas Charge, both fall into the category of they can afford to be a little more choosy with their picks. You know, they're one of those teams that if they want to pick a USA player, they can afford to do that. They've got a stacked roster already, a solid roster that has a lot of veterans on there. They've added a couple more even this offseason. Kristen Sandberg came over from that rebellion disbanding and such. They've picked up Haley Uten, who was underrated pretty much her entire career in Akron and even in college at Houston. But they've added some players like that that can really make an impact. And because of that, I think they can afford to be a little less specific and a little more choosy about how they make their selections. How are they going to pick? Who are they going to pick? And I don't see a position on the Charge that really has a glaring need. They've got solid talent in every position. There's some that can afford to be shored up, bring somebody in, some competition, some depth. But there's really not any position specifically that stands out to me that they have to have so-and-so, or they have to have this position filled. They've got to do that with their first pick. They can afford to be a little more in the camp of, okay, this is what our roster looks like. You know, we could use another outfielder, speaking facetiously, but you know what, this pitcher's here, and if we have a chance at her playing for us even for a little while, we should pick her. They can afford to make that call because, you know, in this scenario here, their outfield is, you know, they've got plenty of talent there. They can afford to be a little more analytical about how they approach it. A little less, oh, well, we've got two outfielders, you know, obviously we got to have at least a few more, so everybody knows, okay, here comes an outfielder, here comes an outfielder. They can afford to change it up a little bit, and they don't have to simply go by what they need. They can go by what they want. And that's important because that's where you find some of the hidden gems. You know, you can do a little more research, find one from a smaller school, take a flyer on her, take a USA player on the chance she may play a few weeks for you and provide some impact, you know. So that just means they get to keep it fun.
Let's talk about some of the bats in this draft. And certainly it's a wacky draft because some of the bats have U.S. commitments. So, for example, could you see a kid like Bailey Landry, who is just off the charts right now at LSU at the time of this recording, was hitting over 500, over 700 slugging, and just really trying to carry that LSU offense, could be the SEC Player of the Year. Could Bailey Landry, with the year she's having, skyrocket it to the top of the draft?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she doesn't even have to do much skyrocketing. She's already pretty close to the top as it is. She doesn't have that USA commitment, which is helpful. It's very helpful. Excuse me. So, and her style transfer is one that transfers well to the pro league. The slapper who can still hit. You know, you don't have to, every time she comes into the box, it's not that she's going to be slapping the ball. She may hit it at the outfield. She may hit it over the wall. She changes it up just enough that you just don't know. And Beth Serena's done well in cultivating that NPF, so to speak, breeding ground in Baton Rouge. Three players last year, got a few more that may go this year. You mean certainly some in the next couple of years. And I think Landry is definitely going to be the next one on that list. I see her first-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, she's had an unbelievable year. Mm-hmm. Another SEC player that's really skyrocketed, in my view, is Nicole Schroeder of Arkansas, who, at the rate she's going, she might be the best Schroeder player in that family.
Now, do you realize we had her older, her big sister, yeah, Jen, on this podcast?
And I think she'd be the first to agree to that. I mean, she is putting up unbelievable numbers, Justin. Nicole Schroeder leading the resurgence of Arkansas, and she does not have U.S. commitments at this time. That's another one that I think is clearly with that family. They're going to keep playing. She's going to keep playing after college. I wouldn't be surprised if she gets another look in the USA down the road, but in the immediate future, could be a bargain for somebody in the NPF, if not in the first round, maybe in the second round.
I don't see her as a first round pick, but I could definitely see her somewhere mid-second round. It's one of the things you have to be careful. And I say this all the time. You have to be careful of picking or assuming that the next hot thing is going to be picked. She had an amazing start to the season. She's had a great season so far. But you've always got to be careful, and you've seen it time and again over years past, a player who has an incredible senior season after a solid career, but that senior season is, you know, it's almost a fluke. Now, I think Schroeder's got some incredible talent. She comes from a solid family. You know what her sisters have done, both in college and then after college. And I think she could make an impact for a pro team, but I caution you've got to look at the full body of work rather than just the first half of one season. I mean, last year she was playing two different positions. She hit 8 home runs. First half of this year she hits, 12, 13, something like that. You kind of got to take that hot of a start with a grain of salt. Arkansas is better. No doubt Arkansas is better, and maybe better than even their record represents. But you can't just look at one season or even a half of a season, certainly, as that being how she's going to do in the pros. I think she can make an impact, certainly, but I don't think you're talking about coming out and hitting those kind of home runs, those kind of power numbers, and you know being that kind of player into the pros. It's just one of those things. I'm kind of cautious about such things just because you've seen it time and time again.
And with the NPF, Justin, we're seeing within the last few years a lot more of the mid-major schools really showcase themselves and get themselves in that first round and that first 10 picks of the draft. You have a couple of interesting names on your big board. Sierra Highland from Cal Poly. Well, you have a ranked fourth, your number four pitcher on your big board. Do you see Highland or somebody like a Morgan Zirkel with her, even with her ties to Team USA? Do you see them maybe cracking that top 10, that top 15 of the draft?
Yes. With Highland, again, it's similar to what I said about Schroeder in that she's had a red-hot season so far. She's performed very well for Cal Poly. And she's deserving of the praise she's gotten, but and she's had a solid career before this year, but you have to just look at the full picture to get her the full scope of her. I think she's an excellent pitcher. I've liked the body of work she's had over her career. I think she's done well, even with the caveat, you know, it was mostly against Big West competition, even though that's no slouch of a conference. It's one of the better mid-major conferences. That's why I have her ranked so highly on my big board. I could see her. I could see Zirkel, even with the USA ties going fairly high. Excuse me. just because she's that kind of a player. She's that talented of a player. Jordan Dixon at Marshall. The pitcher is a senior. She's pitching very well, big part of the Herd's success this year. I don't think you see her as a top pick, but I could definitely see her having her name called on draft night. That's one of those things that I just almost is a given to me. Maddie Grimm, Kent State, she's on my big board as well. She's kind of a left side of the infielder. I think I have her listed at third base, but she can play shortstop as well. And she can hit coming out of Kent State. I like her chances in the pros too. So there are quite a few, actually, from mid-majors that even made my big board just because I like their pro prospects just that much. I think they're that kind of player that can play well in college and translate that to the pros, and I think they can make an impact on their pro team.
You got Teixeira, too, the kid from FIU, first baseman, yep, who's hit her all entire career down there in Miami. I've seen her up close. She can hit. There's no questions about that, and could be a nice sleeper in this draft, right? I mean, she's on that list.
Absolutely. I just figured you might like to mention that instead of me mentioning, since she's down in your geographical area.
That's very, very, very well. You read my mind very well on that. Very good job on that. Is this draft going to be more unpredictable because of the USA ties? Because, like, for example, like the infield position, it's loaded on paper when you got players like Spalding. You mentioned Zirkle is there as far as top midfield infielders. But yet they have, you know, U.S. commitments. And that's fascinating because you don't know which teams is willing to take that gamble with. Not Ali Aguilar at Washington is another one. And even at the pitchers, a kid that I like a lot, who I'm in the minority, but I would probably vote for player of the year if this season ended today in college softball, and that's Sarah Granawagen from Minnesota. She doesn't have U.S. Connection commitments. No, she has Canadian national commitments, which right, in a way might make it more complicated to draft her because you know on Team Canada, she's going to be heavily dependent on. So this is just a fascinating draft where I could see a scenario, Justin, where on Monday night there's going to be specific players who are like, wait a minute, why hasn't she gone yet? Wait, she didn't go until the last pick of the last round, or she didn't get drafted? I mean, could it be the most unpredictable draft maybe in a while?
Definitely in a while. You've got the USA question, or you've got the national team questions that you brought up, Team Canada there too. You've got questions about, okay, how is that going to go? How much is that going to impact the players who are committed to this team or that team? Then you've got the question, okay, the Bandits are under new management. What's their draft strategy going to be? You've got like more than a couple of teams. I personally put the two Texas teams and the Pride all in the group of can afford to be choosy, which means there's some unpredictability going in there, even more than usual. So, yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a very unpredictable draft night. There's going to be quite a few names that we don't hear called. I mean, and again, you're talking about 26 draft picks this year, the fewest in a while. And, I mean, my big board, I had 10 pitchers. That's almost half the draft, or it's more than a third of the draft. I mean, just in what I consider the best pitchers there. My big board is the top players in each position, and it's far more than any of them that'll get selected. So you're going to have players that are on my big board, even if they go straight down the line, that are unselected. So it's also a small draft order, and that's going to impact it a lot. There's going to be a lot of names that a lot of people wonder, okay, why didn't we hear that name called? Why didn't she get drafted? Why, you know, why this, why that? Just because there's so many different factors going into it that have nothing to do with their play on the field or their statistics or their awards or whether or not they want to play pro. There's so many other things going into it this year. It's very unpredictable.
And kind of piggybacks on what you were mentioning, Justin, how is going with all these players, some of them not going to get drafted, how is that going to impact free agency? Because now they get to choose which was where they want to go play, and it's going to impact those fringe players on a roster like in Texas, like a scrapyard, that players that you thought would be a lock to be on a roster, you see a free agent come in. Let's say, for example, if Zirkle gets undrafted, she decides to go to Texas. She has good enough talent that she can may not only be on a roster, but could potentially start opening day. How is that going to impact these teams?
Well, look at Sam Fisher and what she did for Akron last year. Came in, st- started the season with Akron, even though she was on Team USA, performed well. She did well for Joey Arrieta's Racers. Went and played USA, and if I'm not mistaken, she ended up coming back towards the end of the year. That's one of the models that you can look towards. Okay, this is what could happen. This is why some of these teams do go ahead and select these players, even for the limited times they've got them, because they can make an impact. If memory serves, I don't have the stats in front of me, I believe Fisher was in the top three in the league in home runs when she left to play for USA. Well, that's going to make a difference on a team, even if she's only played 3 weeks. So that goes
back. Name a year that player come in and contribute. It could make the whole difference before the championship if that player comes in late in the year
right. And
maybe gets him into the playoffs or helps him in the playoffs.
Exactly. It's one of those things, yeah, okay, they're on a limited schedule, but the time that schedule is limited to, what can they do for me? And there's some players, especially this year, since the U.S. ties are so prevalent, that they can do a lot for you just in the short time they're going to be there. A lot.
You're absolutely right. It's going to be a fascinating draft. Monday night, April 24th on NPF TV. And it'll be very interesting on this draft, what direction it goes and moving forward for the league. Last thing before we let you go, outside after the draft, what's the thing you're going to be looking forward to, top interesting either player available or storyline between the draft and then the start of the season?
I'm sounding like a broken record, but one of them is definitely going to be, how does the USA ties play in? Some of those players could make a very real impact for a team that was to draft them or sign them as a free agent. Are they going to be able to? Are they going to want to? You know, some of them, honestly, drafted or not, are going to want to prepare for the USA season and say no to the NPF. That's going to be one big thing I'm watching. I'm also going to be watching for some players from small market teams, lower echelon teams to some people, that maybe slip under the radar, maybe a late-round draft pick or a free agent signing that can really make a big impact. Those players are in full force this year, and I think there's going to be more than one who fit that X-factor model if they can latch on with a pro team and if a team will pick them up. So that's one thing I'm going to be watching, too.
And the last thing, with the draft being smaller, like you mentioned, with the draft picks, does that hurt the chances? You know, I remember last season with the big stories, we finally had a Division II player drafted. You know, I look at your board, for example, one of the kids you like, Haley Chambers Book of SIU Edwardsville. Does the smaller draft hurt players like that and take away maybe one of the cool things about the draft we've seen recently is players like of that type of school, the smaller school or even D2 that have a chance to get drafted in the back end, probably don't get taken?
Oh, it absolutely impacts them. Because one thing that has proved itself time and time again in the NPF is one of the top qualifiers for a player to be drafted is you play for a top team. And not just a top team as far as top of the rankings, but, you know, Power 5 team. It definitely has an impact on mid-majors and the players that they produce. More on a, like you say, a Chambers Book than a Zirkle, but on them all, nevertheless. It definitely puts a damper on the possibility that a player from a mid-major can be drafted. I mean, you're talking about 26 spots, okay? Alex Stewart at Louisiana Lafayette, for example, she's an All-American, but you're talking about 26 spots. Is a team willing to say no to picking, you know, XYZ player from a lower SEC team or a mid-level SEC team in favor of picking her? Some teams aren't going to be willing to do that because of how few picks they have. It definitely hurts mid-major teams, even top mid-majors and top mid-major players. It definitely hurts them.
And unfortunately, I have a feeling we're going to have a similar conversation in a few weeks when we get into the NCAA tournament picks, because I have a feeling that's going to be one of the storylines going into the Field of 64 this year, with the Power 5 schools getting in maybe at the expense of some of the mid-majors, and whether it's right or not to reward a team that maybe finishes at the bottom or last place in a Power 5 conference like the SEC versus a team in the mid-major. But we got weeks to prepare, talk about that. Until then, Justin, tell the audience one more time where they can find your work.
It's online on Facebook, Justin's World of Softball. I'm on Twitter, and then you can find the website, all of our coverage, at www.justinsworldofsoftball.org.
And you'll be live tweeting on draft night, correct?
That's correct.
Well, there you go. And Vic, tell the audience before we go where they can find us and what we'll be doing on draft night.
That's right. We're going to be also tweeting along with Justin our thoughts on the draft. Follow us on Twitter on Inner Circle SB.
I want the give and take between you and Justin. That's what I enjoy.
Well, of course.
Okay.
Of course.
That's what makes this relationship work. The give and the take. Of course, you can subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic and iTunes. Follow our blog, innercircleblog.wordpress.com. We will have links to this podcast, to Justin's big board and mock draft. So that way you can see it for yourself in all of its glory and splendor. You can send us an email at innercirclesb@gmail.com.
All right. So for Vic and for Justin McCloud, thanks to him for participating on this episode. I'm Eric Lopez. Enjoy the NPF draft. This has been another edition of In the Circle.